everyone, welcome back to the show. And I'm Peter.
Frankie here. Nice to see you guys again tonight.
Okay, and tonight we're going to talk about something pretty important. Actually, in fact, very, very important. Something that's going to make all of us go hungry.
Correct. Even if you don't buy stocks also, this is going to affect your lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Jason just said that we're going to talk about food when he's just fasting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's perfect, good for you, you know? Then. Yeah. Save some money. You.
Save some money, huh? Yeah. Maybe we all should practice fasting.
Good lah. Keep people healthy.
True. Yeah, I'm now trying to practice intermittent fasting. Yeah, I try to only eat like for what? 8 hours a day.
Wow.
Thing. Yeah.
2 meals a day.
Nah, still 3 meals. Just squeeze it on 8 hours.
You know, there's this joke that says that, oh, you know, I only eat 1 meal a day from morning to night.
Yeah. Okay. Now, looks like the world is really, really becoming very, very interesting.
Yeah, right? It's not just interesting. I think it can be dangerous as well if this continues on.
Yeah. I think one of the things that always we see in the global scene or in every single country when it comes to history, hunger. Hunger always causes a lot of problems.
Yeah. The four things lah, your food, your shelter, your clothing, and your transportation.
Hunger is really the one that drives, right? Like Arab Spring, like the French Revolution.
Yeah.
Scary, eh? Yeah. I think the first hunger that is going to start with is Singapore.
They got no more chicken. They got no more. Okay lah, to be fair, it only affected their live chicken. So they still have frozen chicken.
Yeah.
But yellow frozen chicken, not that nice. Right?
That's right. And it's not going to be good for their higher end restaurants. Because you don't expect to walk into fine dining and eat frozen chicken.
Right? That's true. KFC still can.
Yeah, KFC still can. Yeah, but generally it looks like it's going to be bad. So now, how are we going to start tonight's session, right? Yeah, because there's so much to talk about when it comes to food.
So much to talk about. Where can we start? I think we can start from all the food export bans that is happening around the world currently. Right? So if you look, India, last week we talked about India, they banned the export of wheat. And then soon after that, now they also ban sugar, right?
That's right.
They ban sugar. Indonesia, you know, they had been banning the export of palm oil.
Yep.
Argentina also banned soybean oil. So majority of the people in the world use either soybean oil or palm oil to do cooking. So yeah, even oil is affected. Then Malaysia also, because of the recent hike in chicken prices, so Malaysia also decided to ban chicken export.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When was the last time you see countries banning food export?
I mean,
that is very serious.
That's crazy, right? Yeah. So in my hand right now, I have a list of the country who actually ban food export. Let me just run through it one by one with you, all right? I think it's worth to actually take note. Yeah. So the first one is Turkey banning beef, mutton, goat meat, butter, cooking oil, and the ban will last until 31st of December 2022. Kuwait, chicken meat product, grains, vegetable oil. Tunisia, they are banning fruits and vegetable. Yeah. Indonesia ban palm oil, palm kernel oil. Algeria, they ban pasta, wheat derivatives, vegetable oil, and sugar. Iran, they ban potatoes, eggplant, tomatoes, and onion. Argentina, they ban soybean oil, soybean meal. And for Argentina, they are going to ban this until December 31st of 2023. So we are talking about one and a half years more, you know. And Russia, they actually ban sugar and sunflower seeds. This one is until August 31st, 2022. Egypt, vegetable oil and maize. This one until June 12th of this year. So it's soon, but you never know whether they're going to renew, right? Yeah. India, they banned wheat and now added on, they banned sugar. Serbia, wheat, corn, flour, and oil. Kosovo, they banned wheat, corn, flour, vegetable oil, salt, sugar, lentils, pasta, bean, muslin, rye, barley, maize. Ukraine, they ban wheat, oats, millet, and sugar. And Kazakhstan, wheat flour. And Malaysia, added on to the list, is chicken. And I believe there are probably more than just this list, as it's being renewed and updated on a daily basis. Then it's just going to go worse. Now, one thing for sure with all these bans, because what we are hearing right now is actually just wheat lah, right? Yeah, and sugar lah. But if you actually really look at the list, there is actually more, right? There's actually more. And one leads to another, it's going to be a whole big ball of mess.
Correct. Because if you just look at those, like, say, for example, soybean, right? Soybean, don't just think about soybean as soybean oil, cooking oil only, you know. You know the sisa after you squeeze the oil out, right? The the thing can be made into live feed to feed chickens.
Yes, chicken feed.
So, yeah, yes, correct, chicken feed. So, number one, you don't have cooking oil. And then because you don't export the bean, you don't have the chicken feed for the chicken. So chicken got nothing to eat. So you don't have chicken. So it just cascades down to and snowball into a bigger problem.
That's right. Right. Yeah. I guess one good thing for us Malaysian is that when it comes to chicken, we are trying to control the price, right? We're making a ceiling price of $8.90 over, if I'm not wrong, right? But what happened is that many restaurants, you know, at this point is struggling to actually get chicken as well. And many of them are saying that not just chicken, but the rest of the cost has increased and eventually they'll have to increase their price again. Yeah, and distributors are actually right now crying foul with the government. They are saying that you don't let us export and then you don't let us adjust the chicken price. And end of the day, the feed are all getting more and more expensive and we are right now getting a tight margin squeeze.
Yep. So therefore, a lot of people are asking, they say, hey, you know, food prices are going up. Then no, this is the best time to buy all these food-related stocks, right? Consumer-related stocks. Is it a good time to buy all these stocks or not? It's very hard to say because, you know, when inflation becomes haywire, then government has to step in to control prices. Then, like what happened in the all the poultry stocks in Malaysia, when they kept the price and say, like, for example, now they kept at $8.90, for example, then even though your live feed stocks is increasing, you cannot pass on the cost to your consumers, which means to say you have to bear the cost yourself. And if you are not efficient, chances are you're going to go cost overrun during this period in time. Margin will be squeezed, earnings will not be good, and that will affect the stock prices.
Talking about it, right? Then when talking about all this chicken feed problem and chicken price and chicken ban export thing, and the other day we actually went to Baker's Cottage, right? For those of you who actually visited Baker's Cottage, you will actually notice that right now they are starting to sell chicken, actually ever since during the MCO time, right? They started to sell chicken and were selling a hotcakes because it was only selling at 16 ringgit, right?
For one whole chicken.
For one whole chicken. And do you think the price is going to go up?
Probably, because cooked chicken has no price control. They only control the live chicken.
That's right.
So if you control my live chicken, then I slaughter all the chicken and make it into barbecue chicken, then I can sell higher price.
Yeah. This is where the company, is it
Leong Hub,
right? Mm. Yeah, Leong Hub is the one who actually bought over Baker's Cottage. Mm. And I think that was a very, very smart move.
Very smart move. Yeah. They go downstream.
Not sure whether they actually foresee it coming or what, but this move actually...
It's a way of risk management for them.
Move actually allowed them to pass on the cost to actually the public. Because right now, during this point, when we talk about recession, you know, everything all, you actually look at it, they are a food supplier and it's direct to end consumer. So even if their chicken side cannot really make profit, here is where they can really pass on the cost.
The only bad thing is that they expanded Baker's Cottage too slowly. It's very hard to find a Baker's Cottage outlet nearby. You have to go very far away when you can find one outlet.
That's true.
So in that sense, I think because they have no experience in managing downstream businesses, so they are just capitalizing on whatever that the previous boss of Baker's Cottage has built. And then they didn't really go too aggressive on that. So maybe that is a small negative on that part. I suppose if they see this coming, they might put more money into the downstream business. Yeah.
But actually, I can say that I'm seeing more and more baker's cottage. They are really expanding. And I think that with this happening, they may actually end up putting more money into this thing. Mm. Right? Yeah, how I wish we can actually talk to the CEO.
Can.
Sure can. Now, let's start by talking about how Malaysia end up in this situation. Mm. Right. This is one of my favorite topics, actually, talking about food. Because if you guys recall, during MCO time itself, and when you first started watching Mr. Money TV, this is one of the topics that I always talk about. Yeah, I always talk about food security. The reason being is because a few years back, I attended a talk, right? And and one of the person that I think it's from MDAC, and this person was the CEO of MDAC, the previous CEO of MDAC, right? She actually mentioned that food security is actually a very huge problem in Malaysia, but we actually don't see it yet. Why is it so? Because in the past, Malaysia has always been a very agricultural-driven nation, right? Just as any Southeast Asian country is. Everyone is kind of like, you know, if you're buying a chicken, it's likely from a local company. Mm. If you buy whatever you buy, it's likely from a local company. Yeah. Mm. But what happened is during Tun Mahathir's time, yeah, he decided that, hey, you know, we're going to make our country into a palm oil export nation. Mm. And he started encouraging people to actually convert their agriculture instead of doing food going into palm oil. Why? Because when you actually do normal agriculture, it is considered low. Mm. It is considered a low level end of things, not super value added and all. But instead of thinking about how to make it into a food manufacturing nation, you know, that kind of thing, we decided to go for commercial crops, which is palm oil. And soon after, many people started converting their farmland into palm oil. And then you see if you live in kampung, you actually notice your friends will actually have fruit trees or either they have vegetable farm, yeah. You know, whatnot. They will just remove everything after their final season and then they will just starting to plant palm oil. Mm. And because of that, they were given such a good price and everything all, and then they enjoy a good many years. But because of that, what happened is that Malaysia started producing oil palm, and then we convert into oil and yada yada, and then we send all this oil out and then let other people cook their end product and then export it back to Malaysia, and then we end up buying imported food. So today, I'm not sure whether these numbers still stand, but I recall during the time when you mentioned it was more than 90% of Malaysian food are actually imported. Mm. And that is the reason why whenever Malaysian ringgit feel the forex exchange impact, our food become very, very expensive. Yeah. And one thing that Tun Mahathir did during the time also is because he during 1997, he actually packed Malaysian ringgit to the dollar. So there was no problem with
the price inflation.
Yeah, with the price inflation. It wasn't that bad, right? Yeah, but now, suddenly you feel it like crazy.
Yeah, because suddenly from 410 now become 440 already.
That's right.
Almost 10% increase on currency alone.
Yeah.
Haven't talk about the commodity inflation
yet. Right. Yeah. And then at the same time, there's those supply chain congestion, you know, a logistic congestion, and all these are just going to bring up the price, right? Mm. Now, and she was mentioning one thing that really, really caught my attention at that point was that she said that, try to guess, if let's say Malaysia just close all our borders and don't allow any imports, how long do you think we can survive with our existing Malaysian food? And everyone started guessing, and some say 1 month, 2 months, 1 year, you know, and stuff like that. And I recall she said this one thing. Within 3 days or something like that, within 3 days, all our food will be consumery, all gone. And that moment, it kind of shocked me. Mm. And then I realized that actually Malaysia has a very, very, very big potential for agriculture as a business, agribusiness. Mm. Yeah, but the thing is that most Malaysians don't really want to be in the agribusiness. Yeah, because, I mean, who the hell wants to be a farmer in that sense, right? Mm. Yeah, and there are a few companies who actually, there are a few companies who are actually in agri-tech right now, which they are doing pretty well, right? Like Johnson's brother, remember? Yeah.
But that one very small scale, yeah, cannot feed the scale. Whole Malaysia.
Yeah, can't feed the whole Malaysia. Mm. But at the end of the day, the thing is that, to a certain extent, I felt that our government should have actually encouraged more farming. Should have encouraged more farming, you know, giving more incentive and encouraging it as one of the important business. Because actually, if you look at it, we used to be so good with rice. Now, remember during our days, we used to study sajarah, and then it says that rice is our, one of our main thing, right? Kedah, right? And then we actually even have UPM, which is an agriculture university, which is the university I was from. And we actually managed to even come up with different kind of strains of rice that can plant more than once a year, you know, and stuff like that. And I always thought that we are self-sufficient, at least for rice, because Kedah, right? But when she said no, if you actually look at it, most of our rice are imported from Thailand.
Correct. Correct, correct. You are absolutely right.
Most of our rice are brought in from Thailand. So now, and that moment, it painted a picture to me, right? It makes me realize that in any country, if you want to be able to go through really, really tough time, you need to be able, you need to be a country that sells sufficient food. If you look at China, China don't care whatever that's happening. Right? Because no matter what, if I got no international trade, my people still can feed each other. Yeah, you're not dependent on that, right? When you look at Thailand, Thailand is also not that dependent because there are plenty of farmers. I mean, they're one of the biggest rice producers. Right? So they're not bothered in that sense. Yeah, but Malaysia, on the other hand, you know, it's really, really tough. And if you think about Singapore, even worse.
No, nothing. They have nothing. 100% have to use money to buy. You know, during a food crisis like this, if it worsens further, I think got money also no use.
Oh, correct. Yeah. Correct, correct. Luckily, they got small population also.
Correct, correct. That's just 5 million people and most of them are Malaysian, so they can come back home to eat.
Yeah. Quite crazy. Seriously, it is quite crazy. Yeah, so that's the position that Malaysia is in. What I can say is that on the forward-looking side, I guess I do wish that government moving ahead will actually spend more money to enhance Malaysia food security. Right? We can say that farmers don't earn much, but the truth is, if you add on some layers of things into it, it can earn. Because you think about it, even palm oil, right? Oil palm. It wasn't earning a lot if you actually just have a fresh fruit brunch. It is the people who actually have the meal that actually is going to earn more. So I think there are certain things that we can do to actually increase this part, right? To provide more value added food. And
food
and
technology.
Yeah. And I think we did well in terms of chicken.
We did quite well in chicken. Do you know chicken are so genetically, what do you call that? Genetically
altered.
Until right these days, right, you slaughter chicken, you don't really need to worry about their feather because these days the chickens got no feather. Very few feathers. Yeah, so that's one of the things. And even for palm oil, they have managed to alter the DNA until each fruit can squeeze like don't know how many percent more oil from
that's
every
right,
single fruit.
That's right. Yeah.
So those are the things that Malaysia could do. We are actually very good in food technology.
That's right. Yeah, we are actually very good. I mean, we have a UPM, man.
Genting Plantation have their own R&D research arm.
Yeah.
To constantly try to make palm tree more efficient. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So these are some things that like on at a macro level in Malaysia, this is how we actually came to where we are. But because we did not secure the food part of it, then that's a problem because even we talk about chicken feed, it's actually not locally produced.
So I think in terms of the election, I think the opposition is going to use this point to fight very hard.
Oh,
yeah,
probably.
To fight very hard.
Probably. Maybe we'll end up giving them this point.
See, give your free.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The most important thing is whichever government that is going to take on, right? Yeah. It's actually to really try to help to solve this problem. And for those of you who are watching out there and listening to this as a podcast, right? My suggestion to you is this. If you really enjoy greens, go and figure out something. Go and plant like a farm in a city, you know, or something like that. I think these are good efforts. I think moving on ahead, you will see something as people realize this being more important. But now let's go back to the global scene of food security.
Okay.
How bad do you think this will go?
Oh, wow. If you go and look for articles to see what Ukraine produce, you see what Russia produce, I think you will be scared. Because if I'm not mistaken, both countries add together produce like 60% of the world's wheat demand or something like that. And then wheat, of course, we use it to make bread and even your mince eventually will become your roti canai. So imagine one piece of roti canai, actually 60% of your roti canai comes from Ukraine and Russia. So if they're having war and all this supply is being disrupted.
Yeah. So yeah. Just to tell you all some data here, because just nice in front of me is the data, right? Yeah. Ukraine and Russia actually contribute 29% of the global wheat export.
Ah, okay, 29. But not 60%, so not so bad.
Including if you talk about like with the rest of the other countries who are actually banning, I think this number is going to be higher, right? Maybe 30% at least, right? Mm. Yeah, I mean, India.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
And you don't know when is Thailand also going to say like, hey, I'm also going to stop exporting rice. Oh, gone case. We stop exporting rice, gone case.
Yeah.
Gone case, really, really gone case. So how likely do you think this food crisis issue is going to keep going on?
Number one, I think if Russia and Ukraine keeps fighting, it is very hard to solve. Number two, those countries that are self-sufficient in terms of food, like China, for example, I think they are going to get even more selfish because they are also afraid that, you know, people might come and attack them because of food and whatnot. For Malaysia, I think the safety is that at least we are one of the largest palm oil producers in the world. We contribute about a third of the world's demand for palm oil. So at least we can use palm oil to trade.
Yeah, right? At least there's a barter there.
Yeah, there's a chance to do barter trade. You give me beef, I give you oil.
Yeah,
right, that kind of thing. So that could still work. So in that sense, not too bad for Malaysia, I think, in my point of view.
Yeah, for Malaysia and Indonesia. And I think Malaysia at this point, because Indonesia banned palm oil export, so I think Malaysia, on the other hand, gets the, you know, the crumbs in that sense, at least, right? Like whoever cannot go to Indonesia right now is totally dependent on Malaysian palm oil, right? Mm. And I know that there are a lot of palm oil farmers out there, oil palm farmers out there are like super, super happy.
Super rich.
Yeah, like remember the other day we met a friend. His mom is actually runs a mill and actually has their own palm oil in East Malaysia. Mm. And wow, they are laughing at the bank. They were, you know, just 3 years ago, 4 years ago when I met him, the mother was like, desperate about the place, like, ayo, you know, if I can sell it off, I don't sell it off. If not, then let's try to do something with it. That kind of thing, right? Mm. And now she's like laughing at the banks.
Yeah. But the sad thing about this palm oil business is that if you are a businessman planting palm oil, palm trees, yes, you'll be laughing to the banks. But if you're an investor trying to pick the right plantation stocks to buy, even though the prices are doing quite well today, but it cannot show its true potential of the upside that it's supposed to go, simply because of all these ESG concern, EU wants to ban palm oil, this and that. So whenever prices going tries to go up, then you have this selling pressure that try to push it back down. So that is one sad thing for investors. Like, even though we have identified, oh, this area can potentially make money. Yes, they make money as a business, they make money, but share price valuation is not going anywhere.
But I think right now, I think right now they won't talk so much about ESG with palm oil, right? Mm. Already not enough, right?
Haven't go there yet. So that means not so
serious. At least they won't make it into an issue first.
Correct.
Yeah, they'll just close one eye first right now, right? Yeah, that's how is it going to be. Now, talking about how this is going to affect the stock market, all right, because just what we talk about Leong Hap, we talk about food. And one thing interesting when it comes to some of you might actually right now be thinking like, oh, yeah, with this global food crisis, right, you want to invest in food companies, right? Mm. Yeah. So what are some of the thoughts about this? Or what are some of the things that we need to look out for when we're looking for a food-related company at this point?
Okay, in Malaysia, food-related companies, unfortunately, we don't have a company that grows kangkong. We don't have that kind of company. But we do have companies that do food processing.
Yep.
Like those biscuit manufacturers and whatnot. But speaking of that, because they use wheat and all those things to make biscuits, right? So their cost is increased. Right now, nobody controls biscuit prices, so it's fine. Probably they are slowly passing through the cost to the consumers. Yep. But if it becomes too serious, you cannot rule out the possibility that the government just come in and say, I don't care anything that you put in the mouth, I want to control the price. That would be the most extreme of it. But because right now, chances are it won't go that serious. So I suppose that is one area that people can I wouldn't use the word exploit, but to take advantage of the situation currently.
Mm. So yeah. The thing is that you want to look at a food company that likely, or at least at this point, will not receive a food control price, a price control order. Yeah, so like what we talked about just now, right? Like chicken as a raw material, as a raw chicken, it is controlled, but at the moment it becomes Baker's Cottage.
Yeah, it's no control.
Not controlled, right? Yeah. So the one who actually holds both the supply and the processing side and the end user side is the one that's going to benefit.
Correct.
But if let's say you are dependent on other people for your raw material to even start with, then you will actually get into a squeeze.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's why actually during this moment, right, if you actually notice those people who are still making money, in my opinion, is those people who are restaurants. Because you see very fast, today you go to a restaurant, they already put a sticker there and then change the price. Eh?
Yeah, so many stickers on menu these days. Man.
Yeah, so many stickers, right? Yeah. So they are immediately just going to pass it on to you. Yeah. Yeah. So you want to look at this kind of company. So I suppose canned food companies.
Yeah. Yes, they will be okay. And just to answer Andrew's question here, does Farm Fresh consider as food company? Is the same concept. So the fresh milk itself has the risk of being controlled in terms of pricing, but the moment it changed to chocolate milk, then there was no problem.
Yep.
At least that is how the government control the prices.
Yeah, that's right. And on the other hand, if you actually look at a company like Farm Fresh, do you think they will be affected since we are talking about Farm Fresh right now?
Like I say, don't go too serious. If it goes too serious, there's a chance that anything can be controlled.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but I was just looking at Farm Fresh as a whole, right? Because I just bought some Farm Fresh shares personally. Yeah. So that's one of the shares that I'm planning to accumulate more. Yeah. If you actually look at most of our cows, right? If you look at Farm Fresh cows, they actually feed on grass.
Mm.
That's a good thing. Number one, they feed on grass. They are grass-fed cow. So because they are grass-fed cow, they don't need to buy cow feed, right?
In fact, they grow their own grass.
Correct. So they grow their own grass. And then at the same time, you know, it's quite easy to grow grass, I would say, right? Unless you want a specific type of grass. And they just eat grass and then they just produce milk. So in a way, they just control from the raw thing itself all the way until the processing. Yeah, so that is something that I think they are not too affected, honestly. And I think, in fact, they are in a good position. They are in a good position. And at the same time, they also have a great gene bank in Australia. Yeah, so there's two sides of the place that they control.
Mm.
Yeah, and because they control two sides, then the exchange rate, in a way, it matters, but not too much because it's not like they're buying from someone else. It's their own.
Correct.
It's their own, right? Mm. It's not like you are... I'm not sure about other milk brands. Maybe for other milk brands, they need to buy milk from another supplier or either use other people's cow, right?
Mm.
Yeah, then that's a problem. That's a problem.
Yep.
Yeah. And I guess in a way, it's also a good time that they actually expand and they are Myanmar expanding, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So on that end, I think Farm Fresh is in a pretty good situation and that their share price tells because... Just a few weeks back, as I was thinking about buying Farm Fresh, but I haven't bought it at the time, it was about 160, 164. Today is about today it closed at 168.
Mm.
Yeah, it actually went up to about 170 plus and after it dropped down a bit again, yeah, to 168. Yeah, but on the other hand, if you are looking at investing, I personally think that if things get real bad, regardless of whether the company gets affected too much or not, their share price will still remain. Yeah, because generally the market is just not good.
Mm.
Generally the market is just not good, right? Yeah, so that's the thing. But on the other hand, it's also a good thing because it means that it gives you time to slowly accumulate shares if you actually have extra money. Yeah, so that is something good.
Yeah. Plan for the next cycle.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Yeah, so having said that as well, some of you have probably watched our video talking about recession and there are a few tips that we gave out during that time. And one of the tips that I actually talk about is actually this is probably the best time that you start consolidating your assets and start investing. This is probably the best time that you start investing. And because of that, we actually are getting a lot more questions about stocks these days and investing these days. So we actually plan to do a free webinar on
10 and 11.
Yeah, we are planning to do a free webinar on 10 and 11, how to make cash from a stock crash.
From crash to cash.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about investment on that day. We're going to give you some idea and basic on how to actually choose stocks, why during this time stock investment could be a very, very good choice for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, so if you're still thinking about investing in the stock market and you're interested, you know, do come and join us for that.
That session.
Yeah. So we have put up a link there. Do come and join us. It's actually 2 days. Why 2 days? You only need to attend 1 day. We thought like, okay, la, if some people cannot make it on Friday night, at least they can make it on a Saturday. Mm. So you can sign up for either one of the session. Yeah, it is free. Yeah, but free on limited seats. So if the limited seat exceed, then you pay. Yeah, we don't do super charity and... Yeah.
Correct.
So that's something that we are going to do. So please sign up for it. It's going to be on the 10 and 11. Yeah, so choose one of the dates, sign up for it, share the news with your friends. Because truly, 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 there's only three kind of people who are going to go through a recession, right? The first kind is you're already super rich. It doesn't really bother you, right? Number two is investing is not a problem. It's not a top for you because at this point, you need to figure out about food, right? And your basic also cannot sustain already, right? Then please don't come if you're that kind of person, right? Or you're super, super rich until you actually have some private banker who are managing your stuff for you. You deal with fund manager directly. Please don't come, right? Don't bother, yeah? Unless you just want to learn something, yeah? Now, then the third kind of people is like you and me. Normal people who probably have some like extra money saved up every month, you know, and you are thinking about repositioning yourself during this time. And like you have already heard all the talks about people saying like, you know, during recession is the greatest transfer of wealth period, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yep. Then if you want to find out, you know, just come over.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's for us. So please come and join us and tell your friends now.
Yeah.
Now, talking about it, when we look at the global food crisis at this point, do you think what is the worst thing that can happen? What is the worst thing that can happen in the scenario of real global food crisis?
Why not you all try to tell us?
My
answer will be very, very, very sad.
Yeah. So we want to talk about two ends, right? What's the worst and what's the, you know, the soft landing, the light touch.
The worst is of course war, lor.
Yeah.
War is really, really bad. Yeah, see? Yeah. I think everyone, when you think about food security, the worst case scenario will be war.
That's right.
But I feel at this juncture, like I mentioned, I don't think it will go to the extent, because one of the reasons why all this is happening is also because of supply chain disruption. So there is a lot of all these vessels don't know where to go, what to transport now, because everything is stuck at the port, right? So for one, if all this cruise line it's being sorted out, then I think that will help a little bit in terms of transporting the food around the world. Then secondly is, of course, if they can please stop the war, then that would be great, right? And that would actually help the market to come back also. but I don't think it will happen because maybe face problem or whatever.
Face problem.
Yeah, I don't know that one. That one I cannot control.
Or at least maybe China opens up. Yeah, because they also want a very important food supply in the world.
True.
Yeah, they want a very, very important food supply in the world. So if they open up, you know, then that would help a lot. Yeah, that would help a lot. I mean, canned food, you know, everything else. Cabbage mostly is from China these days, right?
Yeah.
And potatoes also, like India or China, like that. So...
Hey, very sad this topic. Let's change.
Yeah.
Let's tell them where we went today.
Hey, Today is all a food crisis. Then you want to talk about food, PMS suddenly.
You see, I talk until I like no more strength. As like, shit lah, war coming already. How?
Okay. Let's dwell in it a little bit further.
Okay, our job
is to educate people.
Okay.
Right. So let's not get too emotional, but let's talk a little bit about, at least we come to a point of talking about how to prepare for it a bit.
Okay, sure.
Then we can move on to something happier.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the worst thing that can happen is actually war. All of us know that. When Japan, World War II, it was also because of food. Right, you look at German, it was the same. You look at every single war, everything, Sri Lanka, everything is all about food. Yeah, because when you have no food, you're going to die anyway, so might as well
fight,
right? Mm. That's the idea behind it. But definitely, we hope it doesn't go there. And I believe that it may not go there because at this point, the world economy is so connected that in order for you to make money, you need the world to run as well.
Mm.
In the past, it wasn't. In the past, in order for you to make money, it's really about expanding. Today, it has expanded in this manner where if one country collapsed, right, even nothing happened to you, you can collapse also.
Yeah.
It is so well connected. I think generally global leaders will do their very, very, very best to prevent it.
Mm.
They'll do their very, very, very best to prevent this from happening. And especially certain countries like us who actually have important assets will be kind of taken care of. Yeah, same thing as like Singapore, if you actually look at it, although they're very small, but they're actually a very, very, very important financial hub. So it will be taken care of. Now, on the other hand, if you see a country like Sri Lanka like that, not much to offer in that sense. So that's a difficulty that actually come in. Mm. So I'm so sorry to say, but it's
something funny just came to my mind. You see, these days, say for example, if you are India, cotton exporter, but today clothes all got lesser and lesser fabric. So it's like, oh, you ban export, no problem.
Maybe they are
even better.
Because they can make it smaller and smaller.
Even better.
Yeah, these days, I think textile manufacturers actually earn a lot of money. Because last time, one big piece of cloth, right? You can only make one cloth. You know? Now they can make three, probably. Mm. Yeah, got all half-cup top. Anyway, but let's talk about the lighter situation, right? Mm. The lighter situation, how do you think this is going to end at a very light, you know, like that?
Mm. What kind of situation? I feel now is the light situation. No? Yeah. Now currently is the light situation. So every country is trying to manage it. So I feel now a lot of people are doing all those diplomatic stunts among countries. So like I feel recently, even ASEAN itself, like the recent meeting with Biden, I feel that was quite a united meeting between ASEAN and America. So in that meeting, I felt that ASEAN actually went there as ASEAN and not, hey, I'm Malaysia, you're Vietnam, he's Thailand. Because in the past, I had the feeling that, oh, everyone just go there for the sake of ASEAN, but actually everyone go there and say, hey, please come and invest in my country, and please come here, please come there. But this time now, it's like, if when you read the news, it's all about, wow, we ASEAN, how. So we are going there as a region. So I feel in that sense that we are also trying to help ourselves because everybody knows everybody's problems anyway.
Yeah. That's quite true. So, how do we prepare ourselves? Do you have any thoughts on how can we prepare ourselves for this period of time when we talk about food crisis and possible recession?
I can't grow anything in my apartment, so the only way I can do it is to save more money, you know, at this point.
Yeah. I think something that I do notice is like when you go to your friend's house who's like richer and they are starting to stock up canned foods.
Right. Oh, okay.
That one is one thing, yeah. But please don't go tomorrow and go and like sour the canned food, You know, please don't be a hogger, you know. Yeah. But I think buying a little bit more does help. On the other hand, I think it's good to learn to grow hydroponic.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm serious. I think that it is good if you can, you know, get the hydroponic thing, then plant. And maybe you should work with a hydroponic fella and then market it. At least you can earn some money, right? Yeah.
We sell vegetables.
We help to sell some vegetables. Microgreen, you know. Microgreen is very easy to grow and superfood. Yeah, go and go and check out microgreen, you know. Those of you who are selling microgreen, you know, please don't go and jack up the price, huh? Yeah. So I think that's definitely something that we can take a look at. Some people say eating less. Yeah, why not? But it's really up to you in that sense, right? We try to be healthier, right? Yeah.
Hey, healthy food is even more expensive, okay?
Yeah, that's true, that's true. But pretty much if you talk about food crisis, honestly, that's as much as you can do. Really, that's as much as you can do. That's as much as you can do. Nothing much already. Because many of you, if you live in condo, don't tell me you want to raise a chicken in your condo, right? Yeah, kill the cat and eat. Okay. Sounds very depressing already. Yeah. Let's move on a bit. Let's talk about what we did today. Yeah, let's move on a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's getting depressive. Yeah. So what are your thoughts? Today, where did we go? Yeah.
Oh, today we had a very, very busy day. So if you guys saw our Facebook story, is it called Facebook story?
Instagram story.
Instagram story, sorry. I'm very bad at all this.
Are you sure you're in social media?
Okay, if you all saw the story, then you all probably know where we went today. There's a prospectus launch of this company called SFP Tech SFP Holdings Tech. Berhad. So they are an engineering service company, and they also do machining and all those stuff. So they are going on IPO. I think the subscription opened today until next Thursday.
Yeah, seven days.
And then it will debut on the 22nd of June, if I'm not mistaken, at 30 cents per share.
Yeah.
And
large share market cap will be about 230 million, if I recall correctly.
Ace market.
Yeah,
so if you guys join our previous webinars before, then you know lah, all the criteria is met lah, huh? Below 1 ringgit, Ace market, and whatever criteria that we have discussed before. So the recipe, the formula is all right. So if you all can pick up the prospectus have a look. But what impressed us and what we gathered in terms of feedback from fund manager is that, wow, the margin is very good.
Before we go into that, why not tell a bit about a story of what does the company do first? Yeah. Straight away, give out juice, man. Don't give out juice so fast.
Say already, man. Engineering services. So they do CNC machining. They do some automation.
Yeah.
So basically, the customers are all the MNCs in the Western countries who has all the hubs around this region.
Yeah. So basically, their customers are semiconductor company. For those of you who do not know, the sheet metal. Fabrication, right?
Yeah.
Basically, it's like you take a look at some of the chips that you have, right? Some of the chips that you have, there's actually a layer of metal, right? Yeah, a very thin layer of metal that they enclose it with. These are the kind of things that they make, lah, right? And when you actually look at the company, I think before we go into like what's exciting about it, I think one thing that truly, truly was very impressive for me, right, is that the founder himself, right, don't even speak English.
Correct.
He can barely speak proper Mandarin or Hokkien, Penang, but he managed to grow
his team.
Yeah,
his team is very impressive.
Very impressive.
Yeah, proper English.
His CEO is a doctor.
Yeah,
a doctorate fella, and fantastic. Then his team knows their stuff. When they are being questioned, they can just answer just like that. And I was just thinking of myself, you know, how on earth a guy, right, who barely...
How he put the team together.
Yeah, how he put the team together, right? And you can see like, wow, I don't know what kind of, he's probably like, in a way, uneducated in terms of linguistic, right? As far as we're concerned. And he can actually lead a group of people like that. And this company actually grew from 2012 until now.
Yeah, just 10 years old.
Just 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years old, they started with like a few machines in a 24,000 square feet plant. Rented, and now they are talking about expansion to 400,000
over square feet.
400,000 over square feet. Yeah, and they are planning to build their third factory, right? Third manufacturing plant. And that is truly, truly something very, very impressive. And this meeting, right, gave me this impression, and I realized that truly, Malaysia is really a very big hub for EMS. We are really, really a very big hub for EMS, right? That in just 10 years, you know, I mean, if you talk about like those dinosaur 20 years, then okay, like, you're talking about 10 years, you know.
Mm.
This kind of growth skill in 10 years,
mm.
it's pretty crazy.
Yep.
Pretty, pretty crazy. And recently, they also bought a company that designs
automation
and stuff.
Yeah.
So basically, they built those machine and the whole automation line. Yeah. So imagine like this line you cut out, put on the belt, and then move. They design the whole machine for that thing, lah. Yeah. And
the assembly also.
Yeah. And the assembly also. So quite exciting. Quite a lot of things. And now let us go into the numbers.
Okay. So the numbers, the profit margin, very impressive. The net profit margin can come close to 40%, which make some fund managers a bit concerned for them to come listing, because now they strip naked, right? Book open, everyone can see that your margin is so high. So one of the question was that, hey, you tell people your margin so high, would your customer actually come and squeeze you?
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
So, I think because they have such a good relationship with their customers for 10 years already, so chances are, I think their customers also roughly know what kind of margins they are getting. And with that foundation, and they are still expanding for their existing customers, I feel even if they squeeze, also will be within a reasonable range. So I don't think that is a very big concern. But my bigger concern is, they are just relying on a few customers. The same problem with VS Industry, the same problem as ATA IMS and all. When these customers, they decided one day they wake up on the wrong side of the bed and say, today I don't want you anymore, the whole company can collapse.
Yeah.
I think that is a bigger risk than their margin squeeze.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But on the good side, I think also one thing is quite interesting. We also did talk about like whether are there, can they do a transfer of pricing, because as commodities increase in price, right? And I think they gave a very, very good answer. Actually, I thought it was a very impressive way of actually answering, which is that they don't have long-term contracts. It goes by very short-term batches, right, of orders. But because everything is in such short-term, they are actually re-quoting every time. So they actually order based on spot market. So it's immediately transferred.
Mm.
So they are not worried about that in that sense.
Yep.
So I was thinking to myself, right, hey, actually very smart. Because it's actually a question that gives them trouble, but turn it around, right?
Yep.
And made it smart, you know? Like,
yep. Because fund managers like long-term contracts. Because long-term contracts means I can count how much you make for the rest of the year. But if you do a long-term contract, then it's very hard to gauge like 3 months down the road how much orders you are going to do, right? Yeah, so but yeah, you are right. So they turn it around to make that flaw into an advantage
to
them.
That's right. Yeah. So that is I thought the team was pretty impressive in that case.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but anyway, this is not a buy advice. We are not
just sharing what happened.
Yeah. It's just
everything.
That the food crisis thing got a little bit depressed.
Yeah. So we talk about something
and,
happier.
Yeah. Talk about something happier, lah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. But. Yeah, it's going listing and it's only listing in the ACE market. Yeah,
yeah.
You can go and check it out. Go and pick up a prospectus. Go and talk to your broker. You know, for those of you who, if you're Boomi, you know, perfect opportunity for you, because there's special location for Boomi. You know, So if you're Boomi status, Malaysian, you know, I think they have about 100 million shares allocated for Boomi status, and only about 14 million allocated to public. Yeah, so if you're non-Boomi, you have to fight for 40 million. If you're Boomi, you can actually just get it, you know. So, yeah, all the opportunities in the world for you, man. Yeah.
Very good, very good.
So, yeah, that is actually something. Now, we went a little bit off topic, but I think we are going to start taking questions, by the way. If you have any question to ask, please do ask. Now, having said that, right, one statement here caught my attention and I think we should talk about it. Warren Buffett just pumped $40 billion into the market. Remember the past 2 years, Warren Buffett keeps saying he's keeping cash?
Yep.
And finally now, he's pumping in money. And he's pumping in money when this time around, everyone is so scared.
That is why we are having that webinar on the 10th and 11th of June. You think we do for fun, one?
Yeah, but having said that, right, my point that I want to make is that if you actually notice, when the market is so hot, right, with all the investors chasing, right, the real 老教, we call them, yeah, the 老教, these people,
the old master,
quiet, and now suddenly the market drop, start deploying his billions, pump, go in just like that, buy. Yeah, and in my opinion, when I look at Warren Buffett buy, right, it tells me one thing, I think it's a good time to start accumulating right now. Because yes, the market could drop even further, but it means it is slowly coming to a slightly fairer price. Yes, on the other hand, actually, if you look at it, for Warren Buffett, I guess when he bought it, he wouldn't have bought it at a market price also. He would have bought it at a slight discount because... over the counter, right? Yeah.
I have a feeling he's a little bit early, but I suppose this is not his all-in chips. Yeah. Probably his first chip only.
Correct.
Right? So behind there, probably still got a lot of bullets.
Correct. Yeah. Means it's... because at the end of the day, you can't really time the market to know when's the bottom, right? Mm. But is that zone, you know? So for him to actually start deploying money, right? It actually tells me that the zone is coming, right? The zone is coming. Yeah, and is it going to go down even further or whatnot? Then, well, I'm not sure, but yeah, it seems like now is a good time to actually start allocating your assets. So as we were talking to quite a few people, and over the last few sessions that we actually talked about, we did talk about a few things that you can do. For those people who actually, if you already invested in the stock market for a while right now, and right now you're seeing negative in your portfolio, it's okay. Because the companies that you bought drop, many of these value companies also drop. So it's actually probably a good time for you to rearrange your portfolio, realign it into companies with great value at this point, right? Yeah. So they lost 30% here. Good companies also lost 30% already. Right? So might as well just switch, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Go with the horse that will likely win when the race starts again, right? Yeah, and for other people, if let's say right now you are the kind of person who can save up some money, as we were talking about, the last flash crash was during COVID. And during that period of time, many of you guys wanted to invest, but let's face it, before the COVID time, none of y'all care about money. Most people actually don't really bother, right? Yeah, only a very specific niche group of people cared about money. And then suddenly, now there are people who bother about money. But it was so short. It was only like 2-3 weeks. And then it just shot up within a month. And many of you were like, oh, I want to invest, but I just don't have enough money. Some of you did invest at a higher point and lose money and so on and so forth. But right now, if you actually have the ability to allocate certain amount of cash every month, this is actually a very good time to start preparing your bullets to actually invest. Prepare your bullets so that you can find the right time and join Warren Buffett.
Wow. I wish I can do the same.
Yeah. I mean, even if it's very little. I mean, think about it. Just a few days back, just today itself, I was reading this article, right? If you invested 1,000 ringgit into Public Bank 54 years ago, guess how much would it be today?
This article always come out, but I don't remember how much would you gain.
Yeah, anyone want to take a wild guess?
Probably like 5 million or something.
Okay, lesser right now.
Lesser. Yeah.
3.8 million.
1,000.
And that's when it dropped, you know. Cost dropped already. Imagine, goes up. And right now, if we are talking about inflation, recession, what's going to go up?
Banks.
Interest rate, right?
Yeah.
Correct. So, now, my point is, you don't need to be a multi-millionaire to start investing. You can invest even if you just have about 5,000, or you can save up 500 ringgit every month or 1,000 ringgit every month. So this is actually the best time. But
remember, small knife can cut big trees. Don't always use axe.
So just to share with you guys, once again, on the 10th and 11th, we are running a free webinar. Limited free seats. Yeah. And it's going to be on Friday and Saturday, so 10 and 11, where we'll share with you guys more specifically on the stock market, a little bit tips on how to actually pick some stocks as well and so on. Yeah. So please do sign up through the link. come and join us on that day. Please share as well, you know. Oh yeah, by the way, don't sign up for 2 days. Is it going to be the same content? Just one day. Now, the reason being is because we have been getting a lot of inquiries on our education programs. Yep. Yeah. And we think that now is probably the best time to actually start running education program already, because because come on, recession is the best time for you to start buying stocks. Yeah. Yep. So in order for you to buy stock, you can either do it two ways. Number one, hear people say, like Johnny Depp always kena from the lawyer, hearsay, right? Yeah. Or either you understand how to buy stocks yourself, right? Yep. What are the logic behind it? So there's only two ways to go about, and that's the reason why we are gonna bump up on our education programs. And then hopefully by the end of this recession and in the next few years, all of us will become millionaires together.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Can't wait for that to happen.
Yeah.
All right. See you guys soon.
All right. Thank you very much. Join us next week. See you guys.
Good night.
Bye-bye.